It's Mark Farrell coming to you live from Pope City. Yeah. I think we can rename ourselves Pope City for the next couple of days. The Pope is coming to us, JFK Airport, in just a couple of hours. So if you can hear my voice in the tri-state area, leave. Don't even think about coming in. Street closures. Complete chaos. Pandemonium ensues for the pontiff. We're going to be talking about his visit and the higher meaning of religion and what it means to you, etc., etc. Yogi Berra. Bummer, huh? But he had a great life. What an extraordinary guy. I'm not a huge baseball fan, so doing my research on him makes me think, wow, I really kind of missed out on watching him because I could have when I was younger. New York City Board of Health, this is pretty cool, unanimously passed a measure yesterday that will require most chain restaurants in New York City to post warning labels regarding high sodium levels. Very, very cool. Love that. And of course, the salary of restaurant, fast food restaurant workers is going to be raised, which is a nice thing, huh? Feel good about that? Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. Thursdays are always fun, aren't they? The weekend's on tap. Everything's possible ahead of you. Always love to hear your feedback. Always give us a call. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Instant Insight. I'm Mark Farrell. Got a lot ahead of you, of us today, including a great interview with a gentleman who started the Stephen Siller Tunnel to Towers 5K Run and Walk that's happening this Sunday. And it's an incredible feat what this firefighter, Stephen Stiller, did on 9/11. And his memory lives on not only in New York City here, but in nine other locations. And the legacy of the foundation that began several years back to improve the lives of many, many people for many years to come. So for me, I've been married 10 years. Yeah, 10 years. I never even thought I was going to get married. If you asked me when I was 30 if I'm going to get married, I was going to say, no way. I can't even fathom it. I wasn't even close to even considering it, meeting the right woman. But then again, my judgment was kind of clouded because I was still a heavy drinker back then. Drugs and everything were still in my life. And I was kind of happy dating those two, drugs and alcohol. They never talked back. They never, or they left me alone when I wanted them to, or, you know, were always there and comforting for me. So, it really worked out well. And then I kind of woke up around 35, and said, you know what? I don't want to wake up at 40 and be an alcoholic alone and all that jazz. So I took a big dive after meeting a great woman. And so celebrating 10 years recently, a couple of days ago. And so it made me kind of take stock. You know, sometimes in life, we all have to take stock about where we are, where we want to go, what we've been through, maybe what we're going to go through. And it really did. You know, I recognized what we have as a couple, kind of what we built. We built two little human beings. I won't get into how we built them, but, you know, you can use your imagination. How we've grown together. As individuals, as a couple. So, you know, if you're married or you've been dating somebody for a long time, cohabitating, or not, you know, it's one of these things that makes you think about, okay, what makes me available? What makes me attractive to others? You know, what do I feel like my attractive traits are to someone else? And even when you are married, you know, I mean, you shouldn't really change as an individual because you're with somebody because they love you for who you were. And hopefully that continues. Yeah, we all change a little bit with time. I mean, because we need to adapt and change, right? So, you know, the other, obviously, there are so many different variables. I mean, you bring families into the mix because most of the times you have to deal with in-laws and, you know, how you deal with them, the relationship there. There's a whole lot of dynamics going on. I mean, there's siblings that become your sister or brother-in-laws. Their grandparents, you know, a lot of judging goes on. But I'm happy to say that I have really, really been fortunate. And I can't speak for my wife because I can a little bit. But for me, I mean, her parents are great and they are not a cause of, I'd say, any fights or arguments, disagreements. You know, once in a while, nothing of any big deal. But I think it goes a lot. In terms of saying who you are as a couple, you know, talk things out, et cetera. Of course, you have disagreements. I do things that drive her insane, and equally so. Probably a little bit more on my behalf that I do that drive her things insane. But it's interesting, you know, because you realize you blink. It's like 10 years went by. Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? So I'd love to hear your input in terms of your relationships. I'm sure many, many people who are listening have been married much longer. Or maybe you're going to take the big step. Or maybe you're not going to get married. And you're just planning on living together. There's nothing wrong with that in my eyes, that's for sure. I think it's becoming more and more in vogue. And I take my hat off to that. Biggest mistake was getting a house, I think, probably big enough to accommodate all of our families here, which is a big mistake because now we can't say like, oh, you know, we can't fit you. It's just going to be too tight, uncomfortable. But no, I welcome that because, I mean, it's all about family. And I think as you get older, you're more aware of that and you accept that more and you want it more because, you know, you want to be around the people that make you feel good. And people that you can make feel good, which is pretty cool, right? I mean, that's what I love, and that's what I love about two things. Number one, about this show, reaching out to you guys and hearing from you and exchanging ideas, thoughts, and perspectives. And take that to another higher level when I'm not here, when I speak to audiences about overcoming adversity, drugs and alcohol, mental health, anti-bullying, celebrating differences, etc. To be in a live setting, connecting with people. And it goes back to a lot of different things of, you know, who we are, where we've come, where we want to go. So on the eve of my 10th anniversary, which is kind of cool, it was the first time and only time a date could be 10-10. So we were married for 10 years on September 10th. So that was kind of pretty cool. It's another interesting factor to that. So, you know, at first I thought, nothing of her being Indian, Irish-American, and she's first-generation Indian, raised in New Jersey. And it's a funny story. I think I've mentioned this a long time ago on the show that when I first met her husband, oh, my God, it's just like a Freudian slip. I first met her father. He wears a turban. So he said to me, hey, Mark, how tall are you? And I said to him, with or without my turban? Without even flinking, without even batting an eye. That was my retort. And I think it kind of broke the ice in the room, the tension. So it was good. And they're great, lovely, lovely people. I could not ask for better in-laws. Her sister, who recently got married, congratulations to them on their newborn baby. So it makes you kind of reflect. In 10 years, you know, what we've done together. Four of those years being without a child, and now we have a six-year-old and a three-year-old. And of course, that changes everything every day. And, you know, I wouldn't change it for the world, but these two kids take the wind out of my sails in a good way a couple times a day. And, of course, they are the bane of your existence a few times a day when you want to pull your hair out. But what makes you, you know, think about or when you think about your relationship, about how good it is, you know, and how far you've come. That's the thing. And, you know, you want to be with somebody who empowers you, makes you feel good. I mean, sometimes, obviously, we all go through slumps in relationships, both equally together or separately because of something that you may not be fulfilled with, maybe professionally in your life, going through a struggle at work, in your industry, et cetera. Or maybe it's health. There's a lot of different aspects and struggles that are part of being married. We just mentioned family. I mean, obviously the immediate family, but then the extended family. I mean, that could be a huge source of disharmony. Absolutely. I mean, you know, we've had, you know, incidents with both families, but we both agree. That's the biggest thing. Is that we both agree 9 times out of 10 about, you know, both of our families, whether they acted properly, improperly, et cetera, and how we should kind of go about it. And I think that's paramount for both of us and for any couple. And even more so is when you have kids. If you do not have kids and you plan to have kids, please, please, please talk about, like, your perspective on raising kids, because I can't imagine having kids and being totally on the opposite end of agreeing in terms of child rearing, discipline, even rewards. It can even go to dietary needs and things of that nature. I mean, it can really, there's so many different variables that can impact a relationship that, I mean, it's critical. And I know so many people that don't have these like pretty important talks, I would think, you know. Oh yeah, you're willing to have the big party for your wedding, you know, have the honeymoon, et cetera. But when all the dust settles, man, it's you and her, or she and you, and or two girls, two guys, whatever it is, it's a couple, and you got to make it work. And it hopefully is a 50-50 input in terms of effort, et cetera. So we all know about that, and hopefully, you know, you're celebrating something of significance in terms of being together. I mean, it doesn't matter how long you've been together, whether it's a year, 10 years, 20 years, et cetera. Obviously, you make it work. Somehow, some way, you make it work. And if it's not working, you know, definitely reevaluate. But either way, take stock, man, because you got to really appreciate the good things that you have in a relationship, certainly. And good luck. And congratulations to me, because I never thought my wildest dreams that I would be married. And I have to say I'm proud of myself, because it takes a lot of work. And for God, it'd take a 360-degree turn in life to realize that, yeah, you know what? There's more to just being single and going out there and getting rip-roaring drunk, doing lots of drugs, and betting a lot of women that you need to grow up. And otherwise, things are not going to be looking too good for you down the road. So we mentioned the big man's coming to town. We're talking about the Pope. He's probably going to be getting on a plane soon from D.C., where he addressed members of Congress and is going to be touching down in New York City. And not only is it a big weekend because of the Pope, the Pontiff is here, going to be doing his thing again at the General Assembly later today, and also this evening at St. Patrick's Cathedral. And we'll talk about the some religious things later. Not deep at all, believe me. I'm not a religious guy. But just in terms of how you think about larger, the big picture in life. But it's another big weekend around here, because it's the Stephen Siller Tunnel to Towers 5K Run and Walk. And that's happening this Sunday, September 27th. And this is a huge event. My sister first told me about this when she ran it a couple years ago. And I was a runner. I've done a few marathons in New York City. And for some reason, I just couldn't run it with her that day. But she told me about this event afterwards. And she said, and this is a woman who's been to a lot of different events and races, et cetera. But she was so moved. She thought it was the most poignant, emotional, celebratory, yet sad, but fun event that she's ever taken part of. And Amy on the phone with me right now is the COO of the Tunnel to Towers Run, who's also the cousin of the lost firefighter, Stephen Siller. I welcome to the show, John Hodge. Hey, John, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. I'm sure you have a million and one things to do before Sunday.
That's all?
That's all? Oh, yeah, it's this Sunday. Did you know that?
Yeah, you know, whenever you throw a party for 30,000 people that takes place with 15 overlapping jurisdictions in two different boroughs, you know, things go smoothly, particularly with the Pontiff coming in also today. So
when did you
find a little crazy right now, but it's all good.
John, when did you find out that Pontiff was going to overlap with this race?
Oh, we actually knew it a long time back.
You did?
Yeah, we monitor all that stuff, so we knew it, and we've kind of been bracing as best you can for it. Obviously, it throws a lot of things that we normally do in a certain time frame into a little bit of flux, but I think we're working all around it right now, but I don't want to really say that with a definitive answer, because I'm afraid.
Sure.
I'm afraid. You know what happens.
Absolutely.
Things are looking great, and, you know, I want to mention that you were just talking about your sister. Well, I don't know whether you know it, we were, and I don't remember, I can't cite the publications, but we were voted the most patriotic 5K in the country last year. And in another runner's magazine, we were voted one of the top five 5Ks in the country last year.
Well, understandably. And we need to tell our listeners why exactly this race takes place and the route, because Stephen, your cousin, he ran from Brooklyn Battery Tunnel after he got off the night shift, I believe, out in Brooklyn. He was a fireman.
Yes, he had just gotten off duty, was heading home to play golf with his brothers in Staten Island, New York, heard the call on the scanner in his pickup truck just before he got to the Verrazano Bridge, turned his truck around, races back to squad one in Brooklyn, grabs his gear. Fire trucks had rolled at that point. So he gets out on the BQE to get into Manhattan through what was known then as the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel. As he gets closer to the tunnel, all the traffic on the highway is stopped cold because all inbound traffic to Manhattan had been closed off. So he just abandons his truck literally right in the middle of the highway. And he gets out, puts the 65 pounds of gear on, and starts to run. And he wound up running from where he was on the highway through the tunnel to the streets of Lower Manhattan, where he met up with his fellow firefighters from Squad 1. And all 12 of them perished together in the collapse of the South Tower.
All 12. Wow.
So this run retraces his heroic footsteps. And, you know, we always talk about Stephen because it's named in his honor. And, of course, mm-hmm. he's a family member. I'm very proud of what he did that day. But at the end of the day, I think the reason this run is so touching and has grown so tremendously over the past years is because it's really a celebration of what the first responders, all of them, police, fire, EMS, what they all did that day. We knew it's a name, it's an honor of Stephen, mm-hmm, but it's
sure.
really for all of them.
And what they still do every day.
Absolutely. You know, we talk about it all the time because we have a mobile 9/11 exhibit that goes around the country, and that response that day by those first responders was something that is uniquely American in that a lot of them knew it wasn't going to turn out well for them, but they stuck to it. And even though they're civil servants and found themselves in the middle of a war zone, it did not stop them from doing what they felt they had to do.
It's incredible. I think it takes a certain individual, and possibly because your cousin Stephen, he was an orphan at a very young age, correct?
That's correct. And he lost his parents by the time he was 10.
And I think that when you belong to a fraternal organization like that, you know, you hear the brotherhood, et cetera, but I think there is a lot to be said about that. And it's just like he would not even think about going to play golf with his brothers, which I'm sure he would have loved to do. But, I mean, when duty calls, I mean, these guys get and women get right to the job.
Of course. And, you know, and based upon the story I just told you, there was more than one opportunity where he didn't have to be as determined to get there, and no one would have thought any less of him for
it. Of course.
But he was bound and determined to get there. And yes, he was orphaned. He, when he passed, had five children, a wife and five children himself, by the way. He loved to have the kids around him. And then, you know, the fire department, because of the way all that works, that was the second family for sure.
Outstanding. I mean, I can't imagine. Obviously, his children are 14 years older right now, and hopefully you're obviously, I'm sure, very in touch with them and close with them and can hopefully share a lot of, you know, who John was.
Right.
Stephen,
right.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right. Look, he has, you know, Stephen was fortunate enough to be one of seven. He was a late-in-life baby for my aunt. And, in fact, it was 14 years that separated him from the next youngest sibling.
Wow.
So,
I would say that's a ski trip weekend, kid.
Yeah. We're not going to go into detail.
No. Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. But at the end of the day, you know, his brothers and sisters raised him. And, you know, so when they lost him, they didn't just lose a son. I'm sorry, they didn't just lose a brother. They lost a son in a lot of cases. So it was very, very difficult on them. But I know in many ways they've taken the same approach with his children now, too. And, you know, they're very much involved in their lives also.
And it seems that there are many sillers on the board of the leadership. I mean, obviously understandable with his six brothers alone and his wife. And there's a lot of impressive names up there. Rudy Giuliani. He's the Tunnel to Towers chairman. You got John Turturro, Salvatore Cassano. I think he's the former commissioner, FDNY commissioner.
Yes, Salvatore Cassano, absolutely.
And these are all people, obviously, who are really devoted to this because, again, it's for Stephen. It's for every first responder. It's for what took place that day. It's almost another aspect of, you know, we'll never forget.
Very, very much so, and it's so important that we never forget because, you know, in our 9/11 exhibit I was telling you about a few minutes ago, the first thing we teach when people get on that exhibit is we ask everybody, where were you on February 26, 1993? Maybe one out of 100 remembers where they were, maybe not even that many. But in any case, the point is we were attacked at the World Trade Center on February 26, 1993. There was a large loss of life, and there was a six-story hole blown in that building. Yet we didn't change the way we operated.
We didn't
really change. We said we were going to, but we didn't. the end of the day, you know, we believe it opened the door to September 11th, 2001. So we better never forget the lessons of September 11th, 2001, because who knows what could be in store for us.
Hey, John Hodge, you had the epiphany about 2 years ago on September 11th. It's probably maybe planning for the run and obviously thinking about what took place for this mobile exhibit. Tell me how that happened.
Well, my cousin Frank, Stephen's brother, and I were talking, and we became painfully aware that that 9/11 really isn't being taught in any great detail around the country. So while we say we're never going to forget, the reality is that these children, the next generation, is destined to, you can't even say they're going to forget because they probably don't know a whole heck of a lot about it. So we decided to put together this 9/11 exhibit. It's made up of artifacts from firehouses all throughout New York City. And the tour guides or docents for the exhibit itself are all FDNY members who were there on 9/11. So it's a great opportunity for people to go outside of New York City and learn a lot about what occurred that day.
And it sounds like a part of New York City actually comes to them. Paint a picture. It's an 80-foot tractor trailer that unfolds into a 1,000-square-foot exhibit.
Yes, it's incredible. I call it my transformer.
We never grew up, do we? There we go.
Yeah, with all the hydraulics and everything, it is incredible. It goes down the highway, and it looks like, it doesn't look like a regular tractor trailer because it's 100% painted out with murals and everything else. But the vehicle itself looks like a tractor trailer, and then when it stops and everything starts opening up, before you know it, we have 1,000 square feet either heated or under air to have people come and really relive. Some people think I'm crazy when I say this, but it's kind of relive it in a positive way, to be honest with you.
Sure, sure.
Because it's very much all about the heroes of 9/11.
Hey, John, how is it determined? I'm sorry to cut you off there. John, how is it determined where the exhibit goes? I mean, can organizations or schools go onto your website, tunnel2towers.org, and apply?
They can certainly contact us for sure. It does depend on where we're going and what's going on. It's booked almost all the time right now. And, we do have to cover our expenses getting it to and from every location because it's certainly not inexpensive to operate this vehicle or to be moving it around the country. But, it is almost in perpetual motion at this point and, it goes from one place to the other. We're on our way right now as we speak into Charlotte, North Carolina today. And I was just down with it in Raleigh, North Carolina, the other day at the University of North Carolina, where to kind of drive home the point I was talking about as far as never forget.
Mm-hmm. Exposure.
Exposure, but we also became aware that there was a 9/11 course being taught at the University of North Carolina.
Really?
The literature of 9/11, yes, the literature of 9/11. And it turned out that most of the selections of literature were from the terrorist point of view. And in fact, there was no literature, zero literature from the perspective of victims or their families. And, we were very concerned about that because, quite frankly, this is a freshman-level entry course. And at the end of the day, these kids would have been 2 and 3 years old when September 11th happened.
Hmm.
And if this is their first real lesson in what happened on 9/11 and we're getting it from the terrorist point of view, then we just felt it was just tremendously unfair.
Yeah,
so the university was very nice and invited us in. We were just in Raleigh and then we're coming back up this way. We're going to be in New York State and Connecticut for the next couple of weeks.
Fantastic. And I'm glad the erroneous information will be or amended to include a different perspective, that's for sure.
Well, we certainly hope so. I mean, the chancellor of the school, the university invited us in, and I had a great conversation with the chancellor, and she was very warm and welcoming, and we're hopeful that the course will change.
Now, John Hodge, I was surprised to learn this about 2 years ago, and I don't know if this number existed back then, but our listeners, I'm sure, will be happy to know, and surprised probably as well, that this pivotal run that takes place this Sunday obviously is the Beacon marquee event, but you have a total of 9 throughout the country.
Yes, that's correct. We have 9 different cities. All of the other events or runs have taken place within the past couple of weeks now. We're always the grand finale at the end of September. The last Sunday in every September is what the city of New York reserves for us. I just want to say this because it's a shameless plug, but I'm going to do it anyway. Tunnel2towers.org. If you're listening to this and you really want to still run or walk, please, please go on our website, take a look and see what we do, and tunnel2towers.org. Spell it, say it any way you want. You're going to get to us. We have all those names locked up, and please register to come. I can guarantee you that if you come, you'll be coming back the following year. That's why we've grown so much over the past years, because you know you'll come this year, and just as your sister, you know, liked it, and I'm sure she comes back with friends now. I'm sure
she'll be there on Sunday, absolutely. And I was actually supposed to go as well, but I had to tell my 6-year-old son that I have to take him camping because I couldn't tell my son I'm going to run a race, because camping with a 6-year-old, nothing trumps that, right?
No, of course not. You got to take care of the kids also. But once, maybe next year.
Once he's able to run, he's coming with me, that's for sure.
Yeah, I tell you what, when you know, it's just so great to teach them early on about, you know, we say this, that exhibit that we put out there and this run is to really let people know that they're honest to goodness, true blue, red-blooded Americans, heroes who walked the face of that earth, face of the earth that day. And because they did so, over 25,000 people got out of those towers before they came down.
Hey, John, you brought up a great point before in terms of bringing up Patriot Day and understanding, especially, you know, his Stephen's sons. Obviously, they know what happened, his children, I should say. But for my son, who's 6 years old, my wife and I decide, you know, we're going to start little by little giving them kernels of information, my son, information about what actually happened. Obviously, you're very intelligent about what you say and what words you choose, but it has to have a bigger picture versus just Patriot Day. It's, you know, it's not a day off, but it's a day of reflection and understanding that, you know, people got hurt that day and or died. And, you know, he'll learn more as he gets older, and other children as well. But I think it's important to plant that seed at a very young age.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you're totally correct in that whatever you're teaching or talking about really needs to be age appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are things, for instance, we were telling the college students the other day, that you wouldn't tell a 6-year-old. You probably wouldn't tell any child in grammar school. Maybe as they get older and into middle school or even, you know, even high school. You know, we have different ways of explaining the story. People ask all the time about, you know, where did everything go? You know, when you look at that pile, you had about a 12 to 14 story pile of rubble at the end of the day from 110 stories. Where did everything go? And the answer really is, sadly enough, is that everybody and everything in its path on its way down with each one of those buildings was either pulverized or vaporized. Just like a science fiction movie, in 8 to 10 seconds, it wiped off the face of the earth.
It really was.
That's a horrible thing to say. So, you know, again, you're teaching a young child, you wouldn't present it that way. But as you get older, I mean, that's just the facts of what happened that day.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a lot of programs. I'd like to have you touch on a few of them. The Legacy of Love. Of course, the run, the Tunnel to Towers run is your premier event. They have the Legacy of Love, Wings and Heroes Award.
Yes, we have many of those programs that have been with us from the beginning. The one that we actually spend most of our time on right now is the Building for America's Bravest program.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the program where we are building smart technology homes for the most catastrophically injured service members coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. And by catastrophically, I'm talking about triple and quadruple amputees, by and large. And by the end of this year, believe it or not, incredibly, we will have either handed over or started 44 of these homes. And we're hoping to get up to a couple hundred before we maybe move on from this program. We'll have to evaluate at that time. But we are able to give these proud service members who have given so much, we're able to give them a home where as long as they're in that home, missing 3 and 4 limbs, they can still live a free, independent, and safe life.
And the video on your website, towers2tunnel.com, is pretty empowering of the individuals who are either in the program, received houses, or will receive houses. It's enough to make you say, sign me up. Whatever I can do, I'm going to be pitching in.
Absolutely. You know, the Americans are very generous people, and more people find out about this. That's what's kind of propelled along for us to get to 44 homes. And I have to tell you, we have a list of applicants in our office that we will never get to, unfortunately, but we are going to keep pressing, and we really want to start to maybe, if we can, get this up to 20, 25, 30 homes a year. And that's kind of what we're geared up to do right now. And that's our premier program, and it's only because there's such a need. If someone was injured in Iraq, Afghanistan, now you're probably talking at least 2 or 3 years ago, maybe longer. they're all living in homes which are inadequate because there's no home constructed, no regular home that's
not accessible. Sure.
Right. Well, and not just accessible, but then also able to accommodate mm-hmm. all of their very special needs because, you know, it's pretty tough to live if you're missing all four of your limbs.
And now some of these veterans in the houses that you are building or have built can operate some of their technical aspects within the home with an iPad.
They can operate everything at home off an iPad Great. Or even a smartphone.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and, you know, as I say, we do have some quadruple amputees, believe it or not. Never quadruple amputee prior to these two wars, but there are now, and we have some of them living in homes by themselves and able to take care of themselves because of the home and the technology that we've put in there.
And that means the world to them because a soldier certainly doesn't want to be a burden to anybody.
Of course not. No. And they don't have to be cared for.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, and right now, if they don't have one of these homes, then they are tied together at the hip with a caregiver, and they're together 24/7 because the caregiver can't even leave without knowing that the service member is going to be taken care of and being able to do everything they need to do during the day. So, you know, the homes not only provide independence for the service member themselves, but for the caregiver who is absolutely going to need to get away just a little bit to spend time on themselves also.
John Hodge is my guest. He's the COO of the Tunnel to Towers. A former theater man and politician. I don't think we're going to be able to get to that, but I had to mention that because maybe some of that, certainly that experience has helped you make this organization so successful. One more program I wanted to touch on, John, before I let you go, because I think it was very important to your cousin, firefighter Stephen Siller, who this organization is based on, is that he was an orphan and you created a Stephen's House that provides temporary housing for orphaned and or broken teens. And I'm sure that means the world to his legacy.
Absolutely. We were very proud of that. We worked in conjunction with New York Family Hospital and built the facility from the ground up. And the front of it looks like a firehouse for all the obvious reasons. And it was named Stephen's House. And we are also currently building another orphanage right now through a partnership in Haiti. Because children was certainly something that was near and dear to Stephen's heart, having been orphaned himself.
Fantastic. How did you choose Haiti?
You know, the executive board makes those decisions, mm-hmm. and I don't know exactly how they made that decision.
And you implement them.
the COO, Chief Operating Good. Officer. I take my orders and go, baby.
There you go. So you got a great set of sponsors, too. You got the Jets. Was Stephen a Jets fan?
Stephen, yes, of course.
Right answer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'll tell you what,
if he wasn't then, and I don't really know one way or the other, if he wasn't then, he would be now. And
exactly.
Wonderful and how generous Mr. Johnson has been.
It's great to see all these big corporations, Home Depot, CBS Channel 2, Ogilvy and Mather, Robert Wood Johnson Trust. I mean, all these people really step up to the plate and make something so pivotal, so important, significant happen, whether it's even just on a remembrance level or obviously to cultivate funds for all the programs that we just discussed.
Yep, absolutely. We're so proud of it. And, you know, there's going to be, stay tuned, there's going to be a couple of other announcements from Fortune 100 corporations within the next 30 days. People are hopping on board with this Building for America's Bravest. I think, you know, Americans want to see these guys taken care of, and they are willing to donate and move heaven and earth to make it all happen.
Speaking of heaven and earth, with the Pope in town, I think he is going to make it. He can guarantee you with a connection to Mother Nature, it's going to be a beautiful day on Sunday.
I hate to use the word guarantee, but certainly from all the radars and things we've been looking at, things are looking great. And tunnel2towers.org.
And that's the number
that's
two.
How you get to participate.
Number two. Tunnels, the number two, towers.org. If you haven't signed up, and it's not too late, can you actually sign up if you actually go to the race start?
You know what? Yes. We kind of discourage it, but mm-hmm. we are one of the few runs that does allow same-day registration. So if you get up on Sunday morning and it's as gorgeous as we know it's going to be, you may say, hey, come on, let's go. Go down to Pier 11, which is on the east side of Manhattan, just at the foot of Wall Street. You hop on a boat, a ferry, which is provided by us for free. It'll take you over to Brooklyn. You can sign up there, and you have a wonderful free boat ride across New York Harbor on a beautiful day on the way to a run which will inspire and move you.
And John, lastly, where do you see or where would you like to envision your organization, Stephen Sillars Organization Foundation, to be in 10 years in terms of project-wise?
You know, as I said, we're certainly looking to move forward and build at least 200 of these special homes, and that's a large, large task. No other foundation has been able to do anything like that, certainly not with these smart tech homes, so that's an enormous goal of ours. And then something else we kind of got into this year, we were also the foundation that paid off the mortgages for detectives Lou and Ramos when they were assassinated here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that's kind of on our hearts now, that we would like to start a program in that area to take care of other first responders, police, fire, who die in very tragic ways while on the job. So it's something we're looking at right now. And, you know, we've also agreed now to pay the mortgage off for Deputy Sheriff Goforth from Houston, who was assassinated a couple of weeks ago.
That's
while pumping gas, of all things.
Yeah.
So I think that probably is our next great frontier.
Great.
And then, you know, I have to tell you, we're very spiritually motivated, and, you know, we accept guidance as it comes to us, just as we do with the mortgages and just as we did with building these homes. It just so happened that the very first quadruple amputee to ever live or survive any war in the United States was from Staten Island, New York, which is where we're based out of. And that's how we found out about it, and that's how we got going with this program. And it's a similar thing with Detectives Lou and Ramos. As soon as we saw that happen, we knew what we needed to do. So that's where we're going with this. And with the generous support of all your listeners and some of these big corporations, we really look like we're going to be able to accomplish our goals.
John Hodge, commendable work between yourself and everyone on the board and the trustees, et cetera. And, of course, everyone who comes out and runs, cheers, walks, et cetera. Everybody has their hand in this.
Absolutely. And come on out. It's going to be a great day. And I can guarantee you, may not guarantee you weather, no matter what the radar says, but I can guarantee you this. If you come out to the Tunnel to Towers Run this Sunday, you will never forget it. It will be an experience for you that will stick with you for the rest of your life.
John, all the best to you.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
You too now. That's tunnels2towers.org, tunnel number 2, towers.org. My name is Mark Farrell. This is Insight, and we'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Tony Hendra.
And Jeff Chrysler.
Of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
On PRN.
Your source for organic,
gluten-free,
sustainable
satire.
Have you ever listened to Anthony Robbins, watched the movie called The Secret, or read about the power of positive thinking from the perspective of any of the many fine authors who have written about the subject? They all focus on the law of attraction, which governs every second of every life of every person in the universe. Like attracts like, and everything you do, feel, and think about as a regular way of being determines your life experiences. PRN's new show, LOA Today, explores all aspects of this magnificent law of the universe every Thursday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. Join hosts Walt Thiessen and Ioana June Thiessen as we explore the law of attraction each week. That's LOA Today, Thursday evenings from 7 to 8 p.m. here on PRN.
The story behind the story, your story, my story, is all in the mix on Lead Stories right here on PRN.FM. This is Utrice Lead inviting you to share your thoughts and opinions and expand your knowledge about critical issues of the day, Monday through Friday, right after Gary Null's show. Listen live to a broadcast or get Lead Stories whenever you want from PRN's archive. You can even rate the show on iTunes. Now pass the word. Tell this story to everyone you know. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network, your voice for independent views.
The towels were so thick that I could hardly close my suitcase. No, that's not what I do. Well, you know what? I've been known to stick a few towels in my suitcase, but they're usually not the really, really good ones because those hotels are just too expensive. My name is Mark Farrell. Thanks for listening to Insight on PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network. I'm talking about some quotables from Yogi Berra, who died on Wednesday at the age of 90. I think he lived some great years, that's for sure. And not being a real baseball fan, I was really intrigued by doing some research about his life. I mean, he finished eighth grade, never went back to school. He was in the education of baseball business, and that's what he learned and was just really, really an amazing player. Besides all his yogiisms, etc. But I mean, just reading about it, even how he got his name, Yogi Berra, named originally Lawrence Peter Berra. I believe it was his first organized team that he was playing with. One of his friends came up to him and said, "Hey, you know, when you're sitting behind a plate, ready to catch a ball, you look like a Hindu yogi." Hence the name, Yogi Berra. It stuck for his entire life. Pretty amazing, right? So 19 years with the Yankees, 15 of those years, Major League, he was an all-star. And he won the MVP award for the American League three times. Now, he's only one in four players to do so in the history of baseball. I mean, that's pretty huge. I mean, I don't know a lot about baseball, but I can easily say that's pretty goddamn impressive, right? Born in St. Louis, Missouri, to Italian immigrants, started playing baseball in the local American League. And basically, it's kind of all history from there, because a few years later, he made it to the majors really quickly. I mean, today, I mean, you got to be an incredibly outstanding player to do something of that nature. I mean, he was actually, I didn't know this, he was a superb hitter. He was actually feared as a batter. But, you know, of course, it was his catching that earned him all his fame. I'd love to hear what you have to say about Yogi, because I know, I mean, Facebook, social media, etc. is just full of kind of bleeding hearts who will miss him and certainly respect who he was as a player, as a manager. He was a manager or coach with the Yankees, went to the Mets, unbelievable, and went back to the Yankees. Pretty interesting stuff. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Certainly known for his extreme ability to manage a variety of style pitchers. And for a catcher, I mean, that's huge. You can be a great catcher. But I mean, the psychology and the link you need to have. Link's not the right word, but the rapport you need to have for a catcher with a pitcher is just paramount. And of course, you know, you can understand that as a manager, he had problems dealing with management. So do many, many other coaches and managers in all sports. Because to be the man on a front line, man or woman, and dealing with the players, the professional athletes, they're cut from a different cloth. And dealing with management style, who are also cut from a different cloth, you know, there's a lot of different hats you got to wear in terms of being politically correct, knowing what to say, how to say it, and when to say it, or not say it. He never got along with George Steinbrenner. As a matter of fact, I believe he threw something at him before the last decade of his life, George Steinbrenner's decade of his life, and then they got along. So I guess age or time kind of heals all wounds, huh? So yeah, so he's fired from the Yankees in 85. And I think he made a joke saying something like it's his first summer off, first summer vacation in 43 years. And also that it's the first time his wife is going to have to cook him dinner in the summertime for 43 years, because he was always certainly on the diamond. We got a phone call. We got Jason in Brooklyn. Hey, Jason, how you doing?
Good. How are you, Mark?
All right, my friend. You're a Yogi fan.
I loved Yogi growing up in New York. I mean, the story is passed down from my grandfather and my father. To me, it's just this legendary player who, I mean, come on, 10 championship rings. I mean, in my generation, Derek Jeter has 5, and we think that's amazing. This guy has 2 handfuls of rings. That's amazing. I mean, it's a legacy as being a catcher, a leader, someone you can look up to. It's like nowadays you don't have many athletes in New York to look up to around the world, basically. Yogi Berra was a leader, winning so many championships, being in so many big positions, catching a perfect game, being a MVP for so many years. It's just ridiculous. He was a great person to have in New York. He has that great museum in New Jersey. It's something that's really good for us New Yorkers to have, and it's great to like show our kids that, hey, this is a great player, someone who wasn't the best athlete of his generation, but someone who worked his butt off and got results.
Jason, you just touched on a lot of things. First of all, being that you grew up in the area here in the neighborhood of Yankee Stadium, did you ever see him as a little kid play live?
No, I'm not that old. But I got to see him. I know he managed when I started going to games in 85, around then.
Okay.
And I got to see his son play. I got to see his son play. Dale wasn't as good, but I got to see him play.
Now, what was the deal? Again, I'm not a huge baseball fan, so forgive me here. What was the deal with Dale? He wasn't that good. Did he want him to play on the Yankees, and the Yankees were kind of shying away from him?
I think that, yeah, it was basically, he had such a legacy with the Yankees, mm-hmm. that his son knew he couldn't live up to that. So it was kind of one of those things, you can't win no matter what. So,
gotcha.
Yogi didn't want him around, but you got to do what you got to do to make it in the big leagues.
Yeah, absolutely. And have you been to the museum in Montclair at Montclair University?
Unfortunately not. My children are a little young, but without a doubt, we'll be going this summer or the following summer when they're old enough to appreciate and see what a great, great museum it is.
Now, I heard it's pretty amazing because, I mean, there's tons of paraphernalia and, I mean, great rare pictures as well. And apparently it's a real education. So maybe if your kids aren't that too young, it's a great way to expose them to the history of baseball, et cetera.
Exactly. And he's a great leader, like I said. So it's something to show someone that, hey, if you put effort into it, look what you can achieve.
So, Jason, before I let you go, I would be remiss in asking you your favorite Yogi hysterical quote.
Oh, I mean, the one that, you put me in a blank, but the one, the famous one that I always remember, the famous one, what's that most famous one?
It ain't over till it's over?
Yeah, it ain't over till it's over. It's like, that's the one where you always say, I coach kids, and that's the one I keep saying. It ain't over till it's over, guys. You got to keep going. We got to keep going to the final out. And they, you know, sometimes they listen, and I feel like a great. Other times, it just whatever.
Hey, Jason, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark. Have a great day.
All right, keep rooting for the Yankees. You a Met fan as well? They're doing pretty good.
No, I can care less about that.
Okay, thanks for the call, my friend. Hey, regardless who you root for, give us a call here at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Yeah, some other great Yogi-isms. I didn't really say everything I said. Now, I think this is a very, very profound saying, because think about it. I didn't really say everything I said. I don't know when he actually came out with this line. I think it was maybe when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame. Okay, I'm not really sure. But my point is, in the last decade, how many people have blatantly, politicians especially, have actually come out and said something just like this to get themselves, get their ass out of a sling? Like, no, you're reading between the lines, or that's not really how I meant it to sound. I mean, words are words. When you say them, if you say them incorrectly, not the pronunciation, in context, then if you don't hear it, and then maybe somebody doesn't call you to it, somehow it just, if you have half a brain, you can understand. And if you're listening to yourself, I didn't really mean that. What I meant to say was, but I love how his statement really, really kind of sums it up. I didn't really say everything I said, because so many people, it's like all politicians are Yogi fans because they know about this statement. Now, one of his quotes on the future ain't what it used to be. Love it. Now, on travel, I mentioned the towels were so thick that I could hardly close my suitcase. I love this one. Baseball is 90% mental and the other half is physical. A nickel ain't worth a dime anymore. When you come to a fork in the road, of course, this is very famous. Take it. Beloved Hall of Fame Yankee catcher Yogi Berra. Of Lawrence, real name, or Lawrence Peter Berra. Rest in peace, my friend. You did a lot of great things for the world of baseball and for the world in general, that's for sure. So, regardless of who you think of your God or the higher power, it was making me think about, you know, the Pope. It's such a gargantuan visit for him and for everybody. I should say a lot of people who think this is one of the best things in her life to actually encounter and to see and to be a part of. And I was here in the city when he was here back in probably 94, 95, Pope John Paul. I think it was like 94, 95 when he spoke in Central Park. And I can't say I saw him because obviously there was hundreds of thousands of people there, but I was there and it was pretty cool to hear him. But raised a Catholic, totally non-practicing Catholic right now for many, many reasons. it made me think about people's faith and how they get very, very excited about someone of this caliber. And you know what? I totally understand, because you can meet the president of the United States and be completely against who they are and what they stand for, party-wise, maybe their beliefs, everything. But to meet someone of that magnitude, a statesman, statesperson, I should say, because it could be a woman, a statesperson, is exciting. So you take that to a whole different level. The Pope, who last night apparently declined to dine with members of Congress and chose to go out or break bread with some homeless people, that's pretty cool. Pope Francis, I think, is pretty progressive in a lot of ways. Certainly not the ways that I would ultimately like him to be, and you may or may not agree, and that's totally cool. But, you know, how were you raised? Jewish, Catholic, Protestant? Do you still practice faith? Or the same faith that you grew up with? Or did you switch? Did you convert? Or you just kind of dropped the ball like I did? And now the other kind of interesting thing is, like, now when you have children, now what are you going to do? And my wife and I, as I mentioned, I'm non-practicing Catholic. She's Sikh Indian. So we have not been actually been practicing anything except for sleeping in late on Sundays, which actually doesn't really happen anyway, because when you got a six-year-old and three-year-old, you don't really sleep late. But I guess it's safe to say I'm agnostic, you know, atheist, kind of the same thing. But my church is, or my faith is, like, decency. That's my thing. Like, you treat people the way you want to be treated. You are here for a very short time on this beautiful big ball we call Earth. So I believe in doing the right thing always and helping people out, regardless whether they seek your help or not. You know, he's always put out a hand or an invitation to do so. And I'd like to hear, you know, what your opinion is. How important is religion to you? Is it something that is a daily part of your life? Is it a weekly, monthly? Or this is a huge question, or is it there, or when you seek it, only when your ass is in a sling? Like, who knows? Maybe you're going to lose your job at work. Maybe your marriage is in jeopardy. You're trying to study or pass a course, get a raise, whatever the case may be. Maybe you got pulled over and you may be getting a DUI or losing your license. I mean, you know, some big things in life. Is that when you seek out religion? Hey, I totally understand. I mean, I've been there. I'd be like, all right, God, I know I haven't spoken to you in like a decade or so, but if you help me through this next day or at five or whatever and help me get over blank, 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 I'll be your man. I will be your man for the years and years to come. But I haven't done that in a long time because I don't think he'd even remember my name. If that is, I just don't believe in the whole God thing. I just don't. And that's cool. Whatever gets you through the day in your lifetime, I totally agree with or respect who you are and what you believe in, because it makes the world go around. We're all different people, raised differently, different beliefs in terms of humanity, ethics, etc. So this is something I do not talk about when I go to audiences, high schools, colleges, universities, corporations. This is certainly not something in my bag of expertise. More so, it's about overcoming adversity, drugs and alcohol, mental health, celebrating differences, anti-bullying, and more. So this is just something that made me think about, besides all the street closures and everything else that is about to ensue in New York City here in the next couple hours when the Pope touches down on the tarmac at JFK. Other things, the more important things. But it's pretty cool that, you know, you can go, well, I don't know how the actual setup was, to Madison Square Garden and hear the Pope. No, it's not going to be the Foo Fighters or any of your favorite bands. It's the Pope at MSG, the world's most famous arena. That's pretty cool. I thought originally there was talk about closing the railroad station, Long Island Railroad, below Madison Square Garden. I'm like, how in the world could they do that? And of course they're not. But they are actually closing for 3 days the Ben Franklin Bridge that goes from New Jersey to Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, for 3 days. If you live in Philly, I think it's time for you to take a long weekend trip and kind of get out of there. Always love to hear your input on my website, markfarrellmotivation.com, markfarrellmotivation.com, and would love to speak at your school, your kid's school, or your child's college, university, or your corporation. And again, you can check out my website, markfarrellmotivation.com. Special thanks to all the fine folks around here, as usual. Jess on the controls, program director extraordinaire Jason Taubenfeld, and of course, Gary Null is next. My name is Mark Farrell. I'll catch you next Thursday right here on the Progressive Radio Network. This has been Insight.